Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh, LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang! Iverson against Gill. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? What up? Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall, and today I have a special episode for you. An interview with a friend of mine, Fernando, the founder of Shrine Co. We talk about the ups and downs of starting your own business in the sneaker space, and I really think there's a lot to learn from our conversation. I know I learned a lot. Before we get into that, I just want to give a special thank you to those of you that are supporting us on Patreon. It really means a lot to us, and we truly appreciate your support. Now, let's get into my conversation with the founder of Shrine Co., my friend Fernando. And be sure to stick around to the end of this episode for a couple of special announcements that I think you'll really enjoy. I hope you enjoy this conversation. And thanks for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Today, I'm here with Fernando from Shrine Co. If you're not familiar, Shrine Co. has been making some of your favorite sneaker bags for the past, I don't know, 5 years? Okay, 5 years. How you doing today, man?
Pretty good. Thanks. Thanks, Nick.
How did this whole thing start for you?
Yeah, so to know where Shrine Co. started, it actually started, probably like 2012, and it actually started as Shrine Rack. Some people might remember that name, some of our like loyal followers from back in the day. And that started as, my background's in industrial design, and I moved to the Bay Area in 2007. I started working for a kind of a footwear studio, and I was doing a lot of shoe design. And kind of before that, I've kind of stepped away from sneakers, and I was just busy with other things in my life. And when I moved to the Bay Area, I, you know, kind of saw the influence of sneakers and how strong it was here. So I kind of slowly got back into it. And at that time, I wanted to pursue a project where I was designing a product, taking it all the way from kind of the initial concept to something that I could produce, and doing everything, you know, in the environment that came with that. So building a website, marketing it, selling it, shipping a product online, e-commerce. And, you know, this was kind of the beginning when e-commerce was taking off. You know, now anyone can build a website with Shopify and sell a product. But at that time, it was a little more difficult. You had to have a website that connected to PayPal, and there was all these kind of in-betweens. So it was more just kind of an experiment. I liked the idea of the product of creating this wall-mounted sneaker rack to display like a fresh new pair of sneakers that you collected that you were never going to wear. You just kind of saw sneakers as art and you wanted to display them on the wall. There wasn't really any, you know, you could buy like an IKEA shelf, but there wasn't anything that displayed the sneakers the way this rack did, because it had like a shelf on the bottom for the right side shoe. And then you take the other side of the shoe and put it the other side of the pair and place it on a little stand that showed the outsole. So, you know, kind of from like a geeky footwear designer perspective, you would show the lateral side of the shoe and then the outsole design, which, you know, the bottom of outsoles can be really interesting and intricate and things like that. So, that was my idea, the Shrine Rack. And,
I definitely remember, seeing the first time I saw it, I was pretty blown away by it because I don't know, I'm sure you had the pictures taken or you took the pictures, but mm-hmm. I remember like distinctively the room was very white that the first photos were in, and like it just stood out. It was like, you know, but I also think that, you know,
showing the outsole was genius in a sense, because I don't know how people hadn't done that. Right. Like right. even in retail stores, I feel like right. you should already be doing this. Right. But it was such a cool thing to see, you know, and obviously getting to know you, you know, years later and like where you've come with all of this, it's been really awesome to see. Right. Was the Shrine Rack successful in like the way you wanted it to be, or?
You know, not at all. I mean, honestly, I wasn't trying to get rich. This was just kind of more for fun. I just thought it was a cool product. It was something that I would use. And, you know, that was kind of the big a learning lesson. The big mistake was like, I was just kind of designing something for me that I thought was fun. But in reality, you know, that wasn't going to sell a lot. When I, you know, to get some kind of customer feedback, I remember I was living in North Beach when I first moved into the city, and there was a sneaker shop. I think it's still there. It's around the corner. It was, Dark Side.
Oh yeah. Dark Side Initiative. Yeah.
Still there.
Yep.
And I wanted to get perspective from real sneaker guys. And I knew there was going to be like a release one weekend on a Saturday. And I said, hey, you know, there's probably going to be a line of sneaker guys out front. I'm going to go. I mean, I was just like, just really trying to get an honest assessment of this product. I'm going to go there. And I was like a total geek. I'm going to bring this rack. I'm going to show it to them and see if they'd buy it from me. And I had priced it based on, you know, my manufacturing costs and a little bit of profit. So like, I think the rack, I was selling it for like $30, which for a single rack to display one pair of sneakers is a lot of money. It would take you a ton of money to build a wall display, right? So, but you know, this was kind of the learning lesson. So I approached these sneaker guys and I'm like, hey. It was just funny. Like I was so kind of shy and nervous, and they were probably like, who is this kid approaching me with this metal fixture? Like, get away from me. Anyways, but I was like, oh, I designed this rack. Would you buy this to display your sneakers on the wall? You know, and a couple guys were like, okay, that's kind of cool. And you know, a couple guys were like, oh, if it's $5 each, I'd buy. And I was like, oh shit, you know, and I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. And then just some guys were just like, no, you know, so it was just kind of more for fun. And I actually had retailers approach me. So like a store in New York, I think it was for Lacoste, or maybe it was a New Balance store. They bought a few online. This European shoe brand. They ended up buying like a set. So, you know, I sold it to a few stores. It was a roller coaster of, you know, trying to get it out there, but it was just more for,
I mean, I think, you know, what year did you say that was?
So honestly, now that I remember, I started, probably made the first one and started selling it like 2010, because the bags didn't start till 2014. So there was many years there where I was like selling it online for a while, then I'd push it and then I'd kind of stop because no one was buying any, and then something would come up. So I actually entered into a furniture design competition in New York City for ICFF, and they liked the idea and they gave me a booth at this international furniture fair, and I'm showing this sneaker rack, and it was just like totally out of place. But, you know, they invited me and they gave me a free booth. I was like, sure, I'll do it. What the hell? See where this goes. So, you know, it kind of had its ups and downs. Like for a while, nothing was happening. And then all of a sudden this big thing would happen. And so,
I mean, I think that's so cool though. There's a few things that for me that I'd take away from that is, one is timing, right? Like you were ahead of the kind of Instagram curve for the sneaker world, right? You know,
Instagram wasn't around at that time.
So, I mean, just social media in general was not as sneaker heavy as it is now. Yeah. And you know, who knows, like, you know, how that could turn out if you were a little bit later, right? Not to say that you wanted to be making racks instead of bags, but like, it's very interesting to look at that. But it's also like incredibly admirable that you like actually went out and asked people in line at Dark Side, because, you know, that takes so much courage. And I don't think people understand how like just really courageous that is, because it's not anybody's nature to just do that. You know, there's a certain sense of like, I can go sell something, but like, even if you look at like, you know, go back to like my childhood, right? Selling beef jerky or gum for the baseball, youth baseball or whatever. Yeah. But you already have a product that people know and are comfortable with. And it's not a reflection of me if somebody doesn't want a piece of beef jerky, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If they don't want to buy to support me.
Yeah.
It's like, and you're putting something out there that you've created. And it seems like that would be incredibly challenging.
Well, it was interesting because I remember the first real response I got was maybe a few years after that. And it's probably the picture you're talking about. I set up this display and I got my friend a model, and he had like an iPad and he's sitting on his couch and there's a sneaker display. And I bought all these sneakers to make a nice display. And I think I got it posted on Freshness Mag blog. Yeah. And that was at that time, it was like a huge deal. And there was a lot of comments about the racks. And honestly, it was kind of like 50-50. Some people were like, this is stupid. And some people were like, I love it. Where can I buy it? You know, so that was kind of the first time getting a reaction online and seeing how, you know, half the people hated it and literally half the people liked it. So, you know, it was kind of interesting. And when I speak later about Shrine bags, you know, it'll kind of give you a sense of what I'm talking about. But yeah, just
let's go back like maybe a little bit before that. How did that idea even come about? I mean, you know, obviously you have an interest in sneakers and, you know, and design, but like
the rack display.
Yeah. The rack display.
Well, like I said, at the time I was working my first footwear design job and I'm drawing, you know, lateral views of shoes and I'm designing outsoles and, you know, I'm researching outsoles. I'm looking at all these different outsoles day to day. And I'm just like, man, like so much design goes into the outsole and you don't even see it because you're, you know, it hits the floor. You're walking around on the ground. No one sees the outsole. And like there were a couple sneakers probably that inspired me. And I was like, man, these outsoles are beautifully designed. And I think that was it. I was like, that's why I wanted to display the bottom of the shoe. And yeah. That's probably where it came from.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that, I mean, I think of just the concept right now and how, if you're a footwear designer, like absolutely, why wouldn't you have this just in your office, in your design studio? I feel like this is like a no-brainer thing that should have existed.
Yeah. And it's funny because it kind of announced a lot of these like personality types, like for footwear designers, they love that concept. Like you would have this pair of shoes that you love so much, you would never even wear them. They're just art. But then some sneakerheads, some of their reaction was like, sneakers are made for wearing. That's stupid. Why would you, you know? So it's like, oh, okay. There's like these different types of sneakerheads. Like, you know, this guy's only going to wear them. This guy is okay with not wearing them. It's like, oh man, there's all the, I got to be careful. Like,
The sneaker world is always very opinionated on that. That's always the hot topic, right? Like, do you collect or do you wear them?
Exactly. And,
you know, I think both, right?
I realized I had to be sensitive to that.
Yeah. And because sometimes it's just a pair you're going to wear. And other times, you know, there's, you know, just value beyond that you can put into words even that you just want that to be displayed or, you know, I mean, and I'm one of those people that has, I mean, I wear a ton of my shoes and I have way too many shoes and it's, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, right? It's a pain to move. I pay for storage, all of these things. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, even just the fact that I tend to collect a weird, at one point I just wanted to have like as many as I could from all the different brands because I figured I just want to be a piece of this. And if I'm going to talk about one, I want to be able to I want people to see that I've owned a bunch to be able to say this person's, you know, opinion is valid because he's wearing the other shoes too. He's not just saying I like what, you know, the marketing says to like, but, it's kind of interesting because even now I feel like there's there's very much a wear your kicks kind of vibe out there. But there's such a bigger respect for the design of shoes now that I could see, you know, the rack being, you know, popular because people do want to just showcase this stuff as art. And I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't, a little bit off topic, but I don't know if you saw it there recently. I think it was Stadium Goods and Sotheby's did an auction and they had like insane amount of, I want to say one of the pairs of old, like vintage Nikes sold for like $300,000 or $400,000. And it's like, I feel like we're in this weird space where one side of the world, the sneaker world, is saying it's all a commodity. It's all about just flipping it and making money. Right. And the other side is saying, like, no, this is truly art, and we're going to take it to art level prices, you know? Yeah. So,
I think for me, honestly, it's just nostalgia and reminding me when I was young. Like, there's a couple pairs, like the Barclay CB94s, like that reminds me of middle school when I was trying to make the middle school basketball team and I was a horrible player and I would never make it. But like, you know, I was a young kid and I loved to sketch shoes. And like, when I saw that shoe, again, someone who studied industrial design later in life, I was like, that is the coolest shoe I've ever seen. Who designs that? Who gets to decide why that looks the way it does? I want to be that person, right? So it was like, it's kind of combined with design and nostalgia and reminding you when you're young and, you know, basketball days in the 90s and with Jordan and, you know, that whole world that, so that's what it is for me. And that's why there's just so many pairs that I just would never wear. I just want to keep them. But.
Yeah. So it really is, you know, and obviously like having a site called Sneaker History, like the nostalgia piece is the biggest play, but I think, you know, it's just, you know, sounds just like we all find those passions through whatever it is. Right. And pulling that back from your childhood, like, and you know, same thing for me in my career in this business has kind of been ups and downs, ebbs and flows in and out of that same like tie. Right. And sometimes, you know, I mentioned in a previous episode, I feel like I'm telling the same stories over and over again, but I have to constantly remind myself that somebody new hears it each time, you know, because it might, you know, you could, you know, the one kid now that you pass along that information about Barclay and their Google and CB94 and like all of that stuff sparks something for them. Yeah. And, you know, potentially years later, that person's like, you're never going to believe this, but you meet them at some event and it's like, I listened to your podcast or I've read something you wrote. And it's like, absolutely, it's great. Like, that's why you do this stuff. Yeah. So how did the transition from the Shrine Rack into the bags happen?
Yeah. So I was, after doing a little bit of footwear design, I ended up doing more soft goods. So designing backpacks and luggage. And, you know, that's what I've been doing ever since. My first job out of school was doing travel goods. So I kind of transitioned from footwear to bags and I was working for different companies. And this is around the time Kickstarter was maybe a year or so in. And I was seeing projects that were backpacks that were getting funded. And I was like, you know, in the back of my head, I was like, oh, I could kind of start my own bag company. And this is the way I could fund the first run. And Shrine Rack was kind of dying, so to speak. But I guess it came to the point where I was like, you know, I love kind of the sneaker world and everything going on there. And I'm really passionate about this. I spend a lot of my free time doing it. And my full-time job is designing bags and I'm getting really good at that. How could I marry these two? And obviously, when it was like sneakers, bags, well, the sneaker goes in the bag. And how could you make a bag that's a little more interesting to fit a sneaker? And, you know, the obvious answer was, well, guys who travel spend a lot of money on these sneakers. And the price of sneakers was going higher and higher. And I was like, you know, is there bags that are designed to kind of protect their shoes when they travel so they don't get crushed or marked, scuffed up or anything like that? And I looked around and there really wasn't anybody making bags geared specifically for sneakerheads. I think at the time, the only bag out there was this bag by, I'm not sure if he's a designer. His name was like the Mayor. He's like a sneaker, big time sneaker.
Oh, Mayor. Yeah.
New York. And he did something with like Flood watches and it was a duffel bag, but it wasn't designed for sneakers. It was literally a duffel bag that you just stuck sneakers in. And, you know, with my design background, I was like, I'm sure I could do something better where it was like compartments that are specifically designed for sneakers. And, you know, if we're talking about like high top sneakers, the amount of space they take up, you know, if a person plays basketball, the size of their shoe, you know, can the compartment expand, you know? So I had all these ideas and, that's when I kind of started designing the Shrine Weekender backpack in my mind. And I was like, you know, I could do a crowdfunding campaign. I could get a sample made. I also had a connection in China who could sample the bag and they could produce it if I was funded and I was successful. All these kind of things lined up. And I was like, it's just something like I have to try this. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'll probably fall flat on my face, but I just need to try. I need to see what can come of it. I need to, you know, throw the rock in the pond and see what kind of waves come back. And yeah, so I tried that in 2014, and I already had the brand kind of started with Shrine Rack at the time, but I was, you know, the idea of the shrine was that you like worship something and sneakers worship sneakers. So I was like, I could just take the name and just wrap it right into bags and I'll just go with it. So that's kind of where it started.
What was it like when you first, this was on Kickstarter, right? So what was it like when you first put it on Kickstarter? Was there like, did you get much reaction? Like, so, you know, because obviously there's got to be a lot of emotion, a lot of energy around that whole process too.
So, you know, if I had to do a Kickstarter again, I would do it totally different. You have to do a lot of legwork up front so that when you know, there's like research that's been done, like a Kickstarter campaign needs to be funded within the first 2 to 3 days for it to be successful down the road. And, you know, I didn't know that. To me, I was like, oh, I'm just going to create this video and just throw it out there and spread it around everybody I know and see what happens. So, you know, I didn't do it the right way. And actually, I didn't get funded when I launched it. I think my goal was like $40,000 and I ended up getting like $25,000. So I reached the end of the goal. And during the campaign, it was like a month long. I mean, it's super stressful because you're just trying to get it out to anybody and like you're begging blogger, please write about this. And, you know, family members and anybody buy this. And yeah, and then you have agencies kind of contacting you. It's like, hey, if you pay us $10,000, we'll get it out there. And it's like, you're kind of desperate because you're like, I'm running out of time, but luckily I didn't do any of that. But, so I was unsuccessful. I didn't get funded through the campaign.
But clearly we're here and
right.
The success came.
So the way it worked out was, a gentleman who works for a really, prominent NBA player, had found the project, liked the bag, ordered it. And when the campaign ended, he contacted us and he was like, you know, where's my bag? And I was like, well, you know, it didn't get funded, so we're not making the bag. Sorry. That's how Kickstarter works. It's all or nothing. And he's like, you know, I really want this bag and I work for this guy. And I was like, oh man, I need to get a bag in this guy's hands. So he was going to be in San Francisco one weekend because that player was playing the Golden State Warriors and he's like, meet me at this hotel. So I had samples. I brought him 2 samples and you know, a little weird interaction, but he took the samples and he was like, you know, I can't show this to this player X. He's like, but I can show this to Dwayne Wade. And at that time, I think Dwayne Wade, his Instagram account was like 1 million followers. And he was like working with a lot of startups and he was trying to kind of become, you know, this guy in fashion and fund a lot of projects. From what I understand, he's like, I'll get it to Dwayne Wade. And I didn't think nothing of it. I didn't know if it was going to happen or not. Well, turns out he did. And he was communicating with this other gentleman that I was working with that also saw the Kickstarter campaign and kind of wanted to help with marketing. And he was communicating with him and he kind of pushed him to post the bag on Instagram. And I had started an Instagram account just for the Kickstarter campaign. And I think it had like 100 followers or something like that. I had no idea what to do on Instagram. I was just like posting pictures. So one evening, I remember I was going to go out to dinner with some of my friends and I get a message from this other guy I'm working with. And he's like, Dwayne Wade just posted the bag. And I'm like, And he was like, I'm going to man Instagram, you man Twitter. So like, it was just like that evening a viral, we had, I think 3,000 followers the next day. And then 4 days later, we had like 7,000 followers. And these people are just like, where do I buy this bag? I want this bag. When is it going on sale? Where is it? And that's when I knew, I was like, this is real. Like, you know, with the Shrine Rack, it was like half the people didn't like it. Half the people liked it. This was instantaneous. I mean, granted it was pushed by a celebrity player, but people were like, you know, oh, I need something to travel with my sneakers. This is perfect. I've never seen anything like this. Like, that's when I knew that it was like, you know, what's the word? Like, it was just the answer that like, this is something like there's something here.
Yeah.
Like stop everything, focus on this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we ended up creating basically a crowdfunding campaign through our personal website, directed all the followers through Instagram to the site, did our own, crowdfunding campaign and funded the first order of bags. I think our first order was 750 backpacks. And I think we sold 3/4 of it just through the crowdfunding campaign and produced it, shipped it when it arrived. It was at my office in Shotwell's. The container drove up from the Port of Oakland to my office with a few of my friends. We literally emptied the container, all the boxes into my office building. And my building manager was like, you better get these out of here fast. Like it took up almost half the building. And we had UPS do like a large pickup a couple of days later, and half of it already went out. And it was just like, it was an amazing experience. But
yeah, it sounds like it, man. Yeah. That's so crazy. Yeah. And so that original Dwayne Wade post is still on his account, probably.
It should be. Yeah.
That was the duffel?
That was the Weekender backpack.
Okay, the Weekender. Yeah.
And to this day, that's our best seller. You know, and I think it's a combination of the hat sling. People love, guys who are love caps, love the hat sling. And, the fact that it's carry on and it's still our best seller. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. At what point did you start to kind of expand into like the duffels, into the various stuff? Because was it like part of the plan? Or it was just like you saw the success and you're like, okay, we got to figure out, you know.
So in all honesty, I had no idea what I was doing. I had never started a business like this before. I didn't know the first step. Luckily, I was working with people who kind of guided me a little bit, primarily a sales guy based out of New York City who was trying to open wholesale accounts and saying, you know, we need to come up with the next product, the variation of that design and accessories and things like that. So he definitely guided me to kind of go down that path. We did the duffel bag that matched the Weekender, was our second bag. We launched that, fall 2015. And then for the spring season of 2016, we launched the day pack, which is a day-to-day bag with a single compartment for sneakers. If you're going to carry cleats or going to play basketball after school or something like that for the gym. And then we came out with wheeled luggage after that. So it's just been, growing, adding SKUs to the lineup and the one thing that we do is we try not to hold the same inventory. So we're always changing the color combinations and the material story every season. So it's always something fresh. We don't just keep making the same colorway. So I think that's kind of led us to kind of stay, relevant and keep people coming back. So
yeah. Do you happen to have, a favorite particular like color or project? You know, I know you've done, many different ones over the years.
Sure. I love the collaboration we did with Upper Playground. It had the artwork. It's right there on the wall of that artist. He's one of the artists for Upper Playground, Sam Flores. Yeah. Sam Flores. I mean, that's to me, that was just like the quintessential project because his print is called, I think it's Sneakerhead or Sneaker something. And I mean, like, what more could you ask for? Like, to me, that's the most beautiful bag ever. Like, I'm going to save that bag for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
what other, we did a lot of, we did a lot of other cool color combinations and materials. You know, now we're working, I'm trying to get more technical with like water resistance and, we use all premium materials. We always use YKK zippers, trying to use water resistant zippers. We're just going to launch a 4-wheel spinner this holiday. I'm really excited about that. So, yeah.
That's awesome, man. So thinking back to, kind of all of those moments along the way, is there like a particular, you mentioned, obviously the first Kickstarter and not reaching the goal. And then obviously having, like the universe, like say, hey, this is still the path, right? Keep your head up, move on. Yeah. Is there, aside from that moment, is there any particular moment where you like you know, we're just like frustrated with it all and, you know, down on it. But you look back at now and just think, oh yeah, it was just like, this is just a learning curve, just a lesson that needed to be.
Yeah. There were, you know, in the third year, there were some serious financial issues. Just, we had ordered too much inventory. You know, we had probably priced our product a little too high. So we just made some probably rookie mistakes. And yeah, we were getting to a really tough spot financially. And, you know, that stress was very thick and difficult to deal with, you know, especially in your personal life. It affects, you know, affects your mood. It affects a lot of things, your relationships, home life. There were some challenges there. And then there was also a lot of kind of overcoming fears. Like, it sounds kind of silly, but, you know, as a designer, I'm mostly at my desk designing, you know, designing things. And it's not my job to be the voice of something or to, you know, deal with customer service issues or to communicate with large groups of people through, you know, whatever channels. So, you know, I was a little reluctant and fearful to take those on. And thus, in the beginning, I was trying to find other people to do the things that I didn't want to do. I was probably afraid to do. But when that didn't work out and we kind of had to narrow down to like a skeleton crew and I had to pick up all these tasks that I was responsible for, you know, I was forced to do them. And, you know, when I kind of put my head down and I was like, you know, I'm capable of doing this. I just the way I approach all other problems in my life, like, you know, put your problem solving cap on and do the best you can and, you know, be scrappy and figure it out. Like, things started to click and work. And I was like, you know, I'm capable of a lot more. It was just a confidence builder. And like, you know, I can do a lot more than just the design part. Like, I'm slowly learning. We've been doing this 5 years and you just learn, you know, things that went right and things that went wrong and just kind of stick to the things that are profitable and working right and build on them and grow. So yeah, it's been honestly, this has been the biggest, like, maturing, like, life learning lesson ever, in business and design and just my personal, you know, building my resume, so to speak. Yeah, it's been amazing.
So, that said, what would be, you know, your advice to, let's say, the 18-year-old you or the 18-year-old kid that's looking at what you're doing now going, how do I do that someday? Because clearly, like, you've, you know, muscled through all of these, like, challenges throughout the years.
Right.
But like you said, you know, 5 years, you know, 9 years in from Shrine Rack, you're able to handle them much differently. Is there anything that, you know, you would say to that young kid that's like looking to do this, you know, for himself?
Right. I mean, so for a product that's a company that's selling a product, obviously I have a little bit of an advantage because I have a design background. So I'm using that to develop product and, you know, that part of it, the business is handled. So I just have to focus on the other things. You know, but not to say anyone can develop a product on their own. You know, it's just a matter of, like I said, from the beginning, sometimes it's believing in yourself, putting your idea out there in the world and being vulnerable and see what response you get and not being afraid to fail or be made fun of or whatever. And so just if you have something that you truly believe is something that people will want or some interesting concept or idea, like, put it out there, show it to the world and see what happens, you know. Don't be afraid to try it.
Yeah. I think, you know, that is like across the board, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, my background in writing wasn't a public thing the way it turned out. You know, I was very hesitant to share the fact that I was even writing, but it was because it was like my escape from, you know, just life, right? It was like, I had the normal job and I wrote, not necessarily about sneakers all the time, but I did write about some stories and stuff that were connected to sneakers. And eventually those early things landed me work in the sneaker world somehow. Yeah. So, it is kind of an interesting thing, and it, you know, something I can definitely relate to. So I'm sure our listeners can definitely relate to as well. Is there anything that you do, you know, to kind of maintain that, you know, balance of all of the, you know, clearly wearing many different hats is just part of who you are now. Mm-hmm. And I assume, you know, the design is, you know, at the core of your passion.
Sure.
So is there anything that you, any type of practices or habits or anything that helps you kind of, you know, keep that, you know, from becoming, you know, I think for a lot of people, the work part, once they turn the passion into work, sometimes it gets overwhelming and,
sure,
you know, they lose that kind of desire to be a part of it. Is there anything for you that's like either, you know, just a habit that you have or practice or just something that you do to kind of like get back to that core of like why you started to do this or chose this kind of path for your career?
Yeah. I mean, in a small way, it's kind of like, you know, like going out shopping and seeing again, as a product designer, like seeing product in a store that someone developed and designed. And like, I just go into a store and I'll see a pair of sneakers and I just love that feeling. Like someone worked on this and like designed that. It's in the shelf and all these people from these cities are coming to see this. Like, to me, that just juices me up and makes me want to design the next backpack that will be that same way. So that kind of always motivates me and drives me. As far as, it's funny you said work balance, like there isn't a lot of balance. I mean, it's tough, you know, I'm married and, you know, you got to turn work off and spend time with your, you know, your significant other. And that's very important. But at the same time, the only reason Shrine is, you know, moving forward and still kicking is because I'm kind of obsessed with it and I think about it all the time. And you know, things are going well. So it's kind of like, I can't turn that off. I don't want to turn that off. So it's just like, you know, I mean, I think about it, like I literally wake up in the middle of the night and it's like, oh, I should have done this bag in this color. And then I'm going to do that next season. And I write it down and like, and you know, that's why it is where it is. So, I'm kind of careful. I don't want to balance it too much because it's like, I need to let it rip and like, just go with it. So.
Yeah. I can totally relate. I mean, I don't know what you use, but I use Evernote, which is kind of the old school of the, you know,
sure,
like note apps, sure, but it's one of those things where every once in a while I'll find myself digging through, you know, from years back and like,
sure,
okay, this is an idea that I should actually think about again and go back to. So obviously we're in San Francisco, which, you know, for me, I think anybody that's listening to this for the most part probably knows this is like the most inspirational place for me. Right. But for you, what do you do in the case of, you know, I relate it to like writer's block for me, like,
sure,
you know, that is, you'll sit down at the computer,
sure,
and just not be feeling it.
Sure.
Are there any like unique things or interesting things that, sure, you do or, sure, or, you know, can go, you know, you mentioned shopping, but anything, sure, else that's like to just find inspiration to like, yeah, well, kick it into gear?
Yeah, no, I'm lucky. San Francisco's got, you know, not only great shopping, but art galleries and great food and, you know, just interesting people watching. And, you know, there's tons of places around the city where you can go just to get inspired. You know, I can even drive down to LA. So I do try to do a lot of, you know, trips like that to see things. You know, I'm lucky because our products are developed in Asia. Like I'm leaving for China next week and, you know, this time I'm not flying through Hong Kong because some of the stuff that's going on there. But, you know, previously I would just spend a day or two in Hong Kong and before I go into China to do the product development. And, you know, Hong Kong is just an interesting city, people from different cultures and their fashion and their style. And, you know, shopping in Hong Kong is like a total another level. And the kind of the bags people wear and the sneakers they wear, like, to me, that is one of my favorite things to do in life is just visiting other cities and seeing different cultures and, you know, their sneaker bag world and fashion world is just, that's like the fuel of everything. And I come back and I'm like, I'm going to do this, that, and this. And, you know, so
Yeah.
Those international trips are like, they're clutch to, yeah.
Yeah. So just a couple more questions and then we'll get out of here. But, I guess like with your background in footwear prior to Shrine and all of what you've done in the, you know, past 7-8 years, whatever it is, if you were given the opportunity to get back into the footwear world, would there be a particular, you know, model or brand that you, or, you know, like memory that you would be like, that would be the one that I would want to, that would get me back into that world?
Sure, sure. You know, I think, probably like every footwear designer, like I would dream of working for the Jordan brand or something like that. But I mean, honestly, like, that's kind of like sailed for me. And like, I found passion in backpacks. Like, and you know, it's funny, backpacks obviously aren't viewed like sneakers are, but to me, it's kind of like a bigger canvas to do something interesting and have it innovation or color. I mean, you know, I almost put backpacks on the same level as sneakers, and I know it's weird and people are probably like, no way, but I mean, to me it is. And that's part of the reason why I love designing backpacks, like just, you know, just a larger canvas to do something on your back and obviously the functionality of carrying things. And so, I don't have like this, I wish I did sneakers, but I'm doing bags. It's like, I love doing backpacks. Like this is just something different. And
it's interesting too. Like there's a lot of, you know, I don't really think about it, but until I come back to the city and I'm like, man, like there's just a lot of bags. There's a lot of brands here that are about the functionality, you know, and what I love about it is like you have a complete, you know, corner of the market that's not like, you know, the other 4 or 5 brands that are here that are, you know, it's the same audience. It's the same customer.
Sure. Sure.
But everybody has very unique takes and twists on of the traditional backpack, or bags of any kind. But, so like that said, what's like next for Shrineco? Is there, you know,
So I told you we're getting back into the wheeled luggage. We're doing a 4-wheel spinner for the holiday. We got some interesting, pretty interesting collaboration that'll drop early next year. We're really excited about. You know, I've been wanting to take this into applying the same kind of construction and design elements from our line and doing a women's version. Because obviously women are very much into shoes and, you know, doing a variation of our designs, but for women a little smaller, you know, different elements. I've been wanting to, that's kind of been on my sketchboard for a while, but just waiting for the right time. That's probably the next one up on the list, but.
Cool, man. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me and catch up. It's always good. You know, I walk out of here, well, new location, but each time it's like I feel juiced after talking to you. So awesome. I'm appreciative of the time. But how can people connect with you online?
Yeah, check out our product. The website's www.theshrine.co. The Shrine, SHRINE.co, not .com. You can see our Instagram page, theshrine.co, same handle. And, we created a promo code on our website. It'd be for sneaker history. It'd be history 15. So lowercase history 15, and you get 15% off your order. That's how you can connect.
Cool. Well,
we got our product.
Yeah. We'll definitely, you know, if you're listening, history 15 on theshrine.co. Check it out, hit them up, and we got some stuff coming in the works as well. So we'll look forward to the rollers is a cool thing to me, but I'm excited for next year for you. It's really, really cool to hear. So we appreciate you giving us the time today, and
thank you.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to thank you again for listening to this episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. Remember, you can save 15% on Shrine Co. bags with the code HISTORY15 at the website theshrine.co, theshrine.co. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes. And if you want even more sneaker history content, join our Patreon page for exclusive episodes and merchandise. As always, thank you for the support, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.